I hereby introduce to you, Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, hey, welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be if you're a UK-based Amazon seller, and especially if you're selling in the US, which I do, and in the UK, which I also do. Welcome to the show, folks. This is a brand new part of the show, a brand new type of episode which I'm introducing. Let me know how you think about it. It's Q&A Tuesday. So every Tuesday, I'm going to answer 2, 3, 4 questions from the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, you've been missing out already, but you're missing out even more, guys. So get over there if you're not already a member. 274 members and rising. So it's at the Goldilocks stage. It's not so few that there's nothing happening. It's not so many that you've got to trawl through millions of posts to get to the info you want. It's www.amazingfba.com/FB. So here's our first question. First, a question about packaging from Ruth. It says, hi everyone, a quick packaging question. My order is almost ready in China and each product is in a gift box. I'm sure I've heard a podcast somewhere which mentioned how products should be best packaged into the cartons to avoid damage in transit, but I can't find it. Can anyone advise what I should do? I'm asking my supplier in terms of packaging into cartons. PS, do you put an extra layer of something between the box and the carton for extra padding? And I want to avoid damage where possible. Thanks. Okay, Ruth, good question. And the simple answer, and I gave some kind of answer on the Facebook post, but I'd like to give a little extra answer here. Let's talk about packaging. This isn't so much about packaging in terms of what your customers get as their end result, if all things go well. This is about protecting your inner boxes as they get packed and transported within China, as they get air freighted across the US, as they get trawled through the I was going to say the ports, but actually the airports that deal with freight, and then they get unpackaged and then they get shoved into your warehousing. Maybe it's FBA inspection, maybe it's Earth Class Mail. Then they get unpacked again and then they get sent off to Amazon. Then they're shoved in a warehouse. They've got to go through quite a lot of stuff, but particularly the air freight from China to USA. So bear in mind, your little boxes need protecting, folks. So I would suggest the following things. The corners, and this is from personal experience of handling my own packaging opening when it comes to the UK, which I would advise you to do initially if it comes to you, just so you get a feel for the process, even if you then outsource it. So that's the first thing. If you're sending to the US initially, you will have to trust somebody else to do that. And that's something I did as well initially. So I know how the feeling is. But the first thing is that you want to ask your supplier to reinforce two particular places on the boxes. One is the corners. That's the number one thing. The second thing is the edges. That is where you've got a corner is basically where three faces of the box meet, if you like. The edges are where two faces of the box meet. And then also you want to get reasonably thick actual carton card as well at the edges. Now that will slightly put your costs up, but it doesn't put it up very much. But what you will find is that you need far, far fewer replacement packages, okay? That brings me to the second point, which is that you really need to have a minimum of 10% replacement boxes available, and you need to get those sent along with your original, possibly in a separate box if it makes it easier. For example, I recently ordered 500 units of a unit costing, I don't know, $2 or $3 each. I can't remember the exact figure now, and freight and whatever else. And for an extra, can't remember what it was, but something like 25 cents a box, so I got an extra 50 boxes made. Maybe I even got an extra 100 boxes made, and you know, that's $25. It's nothing really, but it will really, really make a difference, because here's the worst case scenario is that your products get shipped across the Pacific. They land in LAX or wherever they are, LA airports in California, and they get shipped over to FBA inspection, and they discover that of your 500 units, 200 of them have damaged boxes and you have no replacement boxes. What happens then is that they will have to put the damaged units on one side and send 300 units into Amazon. Meanwhile, you've got to go back to your supplier, ask your supplier for a bunch of extra boxes, which they then have to freight over. So not only is there a massive delay and you don't have the inventory in Amazon ready to sell, which isn't necessarily such a huge problem, but the extra cost is a problem. It's all a headache. It's all stress. So my strong advice is two things, and two very simple things. Number one, insist on extra packaging, extra padding, I should say, in your external packaging. Okay, especially the corners, it will cost you pennies on the dollar, as they say. It will cost you a few cents per box. And the other thing is really, really make sure and insist that your supplier gives you at least 10% extra packaging. I would say, to be safe, 15%. That's my worst case scenario. But some people I've heard that are like 70% box damage. I don't know how that happened. So that is a really small but important part of the supply process. So that is very worth giving to, you know, your due care and attention to it and going back and forth with the suppliers and insisting on it. The Chinese suppliers will have the mentality, by the way, of saving every last penny because they work on wafer-thin margins. You should not have the same mentality. And, of course, you should save a few dollars on your cost per product of the supply chain generally and the cost of goods sold, but don't save pennies, okay? So don't be penny-wise, pound-foolish, as they say. So the suppliers will have that mentality, so push them to make sure that you're happy. Just to make sure you're clear with them that you are happy to spend an extra 10p, 15p, 20p per carton to make sure that the stuff arrives in one piece. It sounds like common sense, but common sense is not in necessarily huge supply in China. Bear in mind, they work on a different business model than we do. Hope that helps, Ruth. On to the next question. Okay, second question is from chat, and this is simply, has anybody used the AMZ Tracker Review Club to get reviews? Roughly how many reviews can I realistically expect to get if I give away 50 coupons, and how fast do the reviews appear after the coupons have been redeemed? All good questions. I wouldn't get too obsessed with any single service providing all the things you need. You need to try a few different things out. I've tried AMZ Tracker, I've tried Snagshout, and I've tried Thomason. Thomason has the advantage that you will get a blog post in the reviewer's blog, but they tend to be so-called mom and pop or sort of mommy bloggers, which means that they've only got a few hundred or a few thousand viewers, which is worth having, but it's not going to drive a large amount of traffic. But having said that, that is an option to explore. I'll put those in the show notes. So Thomason, AMZ Tracker and Snagshout. My disadvantage with the Snagshout was that it costs you about $3 if you do 100 per month or $5 per unit if you do less than 100 per month just to get the review. Then you've got your cost of goods sold and then you've also got the cost of fulfillment by Amazon. So it gets pretty expensive. Okay, so my response is yes, I've used AMZ Tracker. It's the best thing I've used so far of the paid services. I haven't really used review clubs. Some people use them. Some people are a bit wary of them. Scott Volker of The Amazing Seller is always warning against that in case Amazon starts to take a dislike to them, and I can see where he's coming from. It'd be like the Google slap thing that used to happen. So I would be wary of those. But anyway, so the quick answers about AMZ Tracker. How many reviews can you expect to get if you give away 50 coupons? My experience is that something like 2/3 to 70%, so 66, 70% will reserve some reviews. If you work on the basis of 2/3, then I guess 70% of 50, what is that? That's going to be 35 reviews. How fast the reviews appear, that should be within a couple of weeks, but in some cases it will be a bit longer. So don't be in too much of a hurry. There's no point in dragging your feet, but the quality of reviews you have is very important. Bear in mind that certain places, and AMZ Tracker seems to be one of those, will have some quite critical reviewers. So the most important thing these days is not just to have a lot of reviews, but to have a very high average star rating. So, for example, if you have average 4.8 stars and it drops to 4.6 because you have, say, one three-star review that appears and you've only got 15 five-star reviews, say, something like that. I don't know if the maths works, but you get the idea. That can have a big percentage impact on conversion because people look at it and they say, oh, it's only got 4.6 stars. And we all know that, you know, Amazon five stars means good and four stars means not very good. It's not really the question that three stars is neutral because, you know, it's like anything else. There's a sort of, what's the word? There's a kind of arms race in the Amazon world with reviews, isn't there? So basically everyone say how marvelous everything is all the time. So any hint of criticism is taken as more honesty, which is probably true. So bear in mind that the average quality of the reviews is just as important as the number. The other thing to say is the actual things that people say about the product is also important. If you've got videos, if you've got images, that's important. I have to say AMZ Tracker is good for that. And also the actual quality of the writing. If somebody writes a one-sentence review, I think that may even be against Amazon's terms of service now, and they might start removing it. Even if they don't, it doesn't look good. It looks a bit fake. And also the one thing that people read is blah, blah. Yeah, nice product. Receive this for a discount in exchange for an honest review. So ultimately, what you want to do anyway is have enough organic reviews and push those towards the top so it doesn't just look like you've paid for a bunch of reviews. Hope that gives a full answer, chat. Do come back in the Facebook group if there's any other questions you have. www.amazingfba.com/FBF, as in Frank, B as in book. On to the next question. Okay, next question is a bit of a bigger picture, quite an interesting general question. Stuart asks, anyone fulfilling to the US from the UK? To clarify, I'm not using FBA, but posting items to the US either tracked or untracked. Okay, I mean, I basically would advise you not to do this. I know that we discussed this, Stuart, so if you're listening, don't panic. I'm not changing my advice. But broadly speaking, don't do this. If you're going to fulfill in the US, get the inventory posted straight over to the US from China or wherever you're sourcing it from. I mean, for 90% of us, that will be China. If you're sourcing in the US, then that's no problem, obviously. Unless you have a very particular type of product that is UK-based and you can sell in the US as a sort of heritage-type product. I mean, like as a UK musician, I might sell something that's, I don't know, a very heritage item all to do with Elgar, who's very popular in the United States, or Vaughan Williams or something like that. But that's really kind of not a classic Amazon product. So I'm trying to think of a situation in which it would be a good idea to sell on Amazon from the UK and failing. If you already have inventory in the UK and you want to sell it in the USA as a little test, then you probably want to use DHL or UPS. UPS probably has the advantage of being sort of Amazon friendly in that UPS is Amazon's kind of native carrier, if you like. They have a special deal with them. So my instinct would be to do UPS. It's not something I've done myself. By all means, do it for a little test order, but I would use maybe 20 units, 30 units or something. I really wouldn't do very much of that because it's going to be just as efficient to go back to your Chinese supplier and say, look, could you do me a test order of 50 units unbranded or maybe 100 or whatever and send it over to the USA? By the time you've done that, it's probably going to be about the same kind of price, really. I wouldn't get too obsessed with actually having units. The cost of transporting goods around the world is normally similar to the cost, if you're looking at air freight, is similar to the cost of the actual manufacturer itself. So, for example, I've got goods that I sell in the USA that cost me $2 per unit. And by the time I've landed them and got duty paid and freight and everything else, it's about $4.50 or something. So the actual manufacturer cost, or the value, if you like, of the actual product is not that huge relative to the overall cost. So I wouldn't get obsessed with having the physical product. I would think more about the overall cost of manufacturing plus the freight and supply chain. So hope that helps. It's a bit of an unusual question, but it's an interesting one because it has come up a couple of times. Quick question from Paul about photography. He says, hi all, I am looking at professional photography at the moment. Currently, I'm trying to decide if it is worth using FBA Inspection's photograph service as they already have the product there, or is it better to use a proper professional photographer? Anyone else have any experience with FBA Inspection's photograph service? Well, thanks for the question, Paul. Interesting question. Basically, yes, I have experience with FBA Inspection's photography service, but only insofar as somebody got their iPhone out or something and photographed the flaws with my product. And that is probably all I would suggest you do it with. I don't have experience with them, and if they're really good, then use them. But I think it's much better to simply get a sample that you've had and sent to you when you okayed the product and use that with your photographer. If they need to Photoshop on your logo or something, if your sample didn't come with your logo on it, that's actually not a big problem for a professional photographer. The guy I use is Brian Cottam of briancottam.co.uk. I'll put it in the show notes. But basically, I really strongly advise you to have really strong quality control of your photographs, because on Amazon, the first thing that people are going to see when they put the keywords in, apart from keyword optimization, so your listing appears in the sort of list of results, the only other really, really killer thing is the photograph. If the photograph's really good, it will really help you to get people clicking on your listing. And if all the other photos are good, that then helps conversion as well. So people can't touch the product. They can't feel the product. They can't even hear it if it's got any auditory element to it. So all they can do is see it, really. So the photography is absolutely basic and crucial. It's possible that FBA Inspection will do a great job, but they are in the States. I would probably suggest that you get a photographer in the UK because it's just easier for the actual communication. Up to you. I know lots of people that use photographers in the US as well, but I prefer to keep my communication chains and my supply chains as short and as simple as possible. And the more I scale up, the more I'm realizing how important simplicity is whenever you can get it, because this is, in essence, a pretty complex business model. I mean, Amazon takes care of a lot of it, but actually it's still quite complex. There's a lot of moving parts. So I would suggest getting somebody in the same time zone as you. And assuming you're UK-based, Paul, which I think you are, it's going to be a lot easier to use a UK-based photographer. You can actually have physical conversation. You can even go and take the product to them if you want to get really involved. Because obviously a good relationship with professionals like a photographer, an accountant, a designer, a mentor is going to be really, really crucial as you grow your business and scale it up. You want to have people you trust and know. So it's quite nice to be able to physically meet them in the first place if you can. Another question from Ruth's really going for it this time with the questions. Do I need to be registered as a company or a sole trader to set up my seller's account on Amazon? I wanted to do that today, but not sure if I need to get the registration as a company or sole trader sorted first. When I looked at setting up a seller's account, it looked like I would need a registered business number. Is this the case? Okay, Ruth, so simple answer is you can start off as a sole trader and then change over to a company when you register one, assuming you're going to do that. If you need a business number, I'm not sure about that. The rules may have changed since I registered with Amazon Seller Central as a company, which is a while ago. But if you need a VAT number, I think there may be ways around that if you're not VAT registered. That is something to double check with Seller Central. But the basic idea is, yes, you can get started and then change entity down the line. That's not a big deal. When I did it, it was certainly pretty straightforward. Another way of looking at it, though, is that you probably want to start off as you mean to go on. So it's worth forming a company if you're serious about this and if you've got some kind of experience or background and you're putting a substantial money in up front. If you want to keep things simple and you are investing a small amount up front to give it a try and test out the market, it's just simpler to be a sole trader because you have simpler accounts and you have slightly less regulation to deal with. I mean, if you do register a company, here's my take on that. Number one, it's quicker and easier than nearly everybody thinks to start a company. You can do it for as little as $13 with Companies House, and it will be about 20 minutes work for you, and then it will take 4 hours to happen. It's incredibly quick and easy, much easier, in my experience, than setting up a business bank account ever has been. And so that's the good news. You can use a company like companiesmadesimple.com, which is what I did and what my accountant recommends, and my long-suffering accountant, Penny Lowe, who will be coming on a future podcast to give us some lowdowns on how to set your accounting up so you're not going nuts with the numbers. So yeah, companiesmadesimple.com will do the job for you. What you do have to do is three things. One is an annual return with Companies House, which is a piece of cake. You basically say, has the director moved or whatever? So that's very easy. You have to do an annual return with Companies House, which is less easy. And you have to do a company tax return, which is a little bit ugly. However, if you think about it, if you turn over a substantial amount of money in your business, then you're going to start, if you make a profit, which hopefully we're all going to do quite soon, then it will start to affect your personal tax liability, in which case you will want to think seriously about forming a company sooner or later. So my instinct was to just get on with forming a company, and I'm glad I did. However, it is more complicated and time consuming. So if you haven't got so much time to put into your business and you think you're going to run late with putting your corporate tax return in or whatever, start as a sole trader, keep it simple, and then just change over later down the line. Hope that helps.
Hey, this is Johnny Dumas of EO Fire, and you're listening to Amazing FBA with the marvelous Michael Veazey, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. You must be prepared to ignite.
Many thanks to John Lee Dumas there for the fantastic little bumper that he sent me. Now, that was a reward for me leaving an iTunes review for his wonderful podcast on how to be a podcaster. And in return for which, I did a screenshot of my review and I sent it over to him, and he was prepared to do a little audio bumper for me, which is fantastic. Now, what I would like to do is offer you a similar little deal, which is to say that if you will do an iTunes review for the podcast, which we really need, and you know, say what it's about and how it's helped you, then in return, I will do a quick email support question for you. So you can just email me, michael@amazingfba.com. You need to stick in a screenshot of your iTunes review, and then I will come back to you. You can then give me a detailed question. I can answer it for you on email. This is normally something that's now only open to my mentees. I'm very happy to answer questions all day long in the Facebook group because everyone benefits from it, but I can't take the time. I'm afraid to do one-to-one coaching via email because I just haven't got the time. I've got to run the podcasts, I've got to run the groups, and above all, I've got to run my Amazon business. So that is one thing that I won't be able to offer you, but I can offer you as a special bonus if you do an iTunes review. So if you want to know how to do that and you're not sure, just head over to the blog www.amazingfba.com, and I will put up a little thing that says something like leave an iTunes review, and I will put some instructions in there because it is not always obvious. For some reason, Apple makes it a bit tricky. Okay then, folks, that's it for today's episode. We've got lots and lots of interviews coming up. We've got all sorts of people, including Greg from Jungle Scout and Will Turland, who's sold, I believe, over $10 million worth of products on Amazon with his brother over the last few years. They had one year where I believe they sold $6 million worth of products on Amazon in that year alone. So totally worth hearing. all sorts of other people lined up. I haven't even got time to tell you now because I'm determined to keep this to 20 minutes. So it's a quick jog or it's a quick commute to work or whatever for you or while you're washing up. Hope you're having fun. Remember, guys, it's no use learning this stuff if you don't do something about it. So hopefully these tactical little questions and the answers will help. If you've got any other questions, come to the Facebook group and put them in. And if you would like me to answer them on the podcast in more detail, then put a little note and tell me that, and I will certainly consider doing that. Other than that, guys, go out, learn, do review, and learn everything you can about this business, but do something with it. Because if you learn a load of stuff and you don't implement it, it's actually no good. And the worst thing is that you feel like you're working on your business because you're learning stuff, but if you don't do stuff, you won't really understand it and grasp it. So please, Dias, I am that you've been listening to the podcast, please stop listening to the podcast now and go do something on your business. Go work on it, even if it's product research or something. If you need to go and tweak your systems, if you need to go back and get hold of your supplier and you're just about to get some stuff sent over from China to the US or the UK and tell them to change the packaging, you know, whatever it is that practically results from it, get that done. Go do something. If it's one thing today, if it's one thing this week, then at least that's real progress. Okay, guys, thank you very much for your attention. Much appreciated as ever. I'll speak to you in the next podcast.